What is the craziest thing Mike Borgonzi could do with the fourth overall pick? We're going to break down the options today. Plus, Daniel Jeremiah with an interesting report about who the Titans do not like at number four overall. This is the Music City Audible. Let's get to it. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, the publisher of NFL Draft on SI, the author of Tennessee Titans history book that sits behind me on a shelf. It's my co-host, Justin Mello, Titans of the South. How's it going, Justin? How you doing today?
Doing well. Just hopped off the Will and Ramon show.
Oh, nice.
Doing some Titans local radio as we talked about the NFL draft. Excited to jump right off that, right into this here, the Thursday episode of the Music City Audible podcast. We've got a doozy for you guys today regarding, guess what? The NFL draft.
Yes, sir. And here's where we're at. So yesterday I mentioned that Bill Barnwell published an all trades mock. Well, Matt Verderame, technically your colleague now at Sports Illustrated, he has an all trades mock out today. And it's just like, you know, we're 2 weeks to the day from the draft and everybody's got to find a new angle to approach it. And we are no different. We're talking about options that we haven't discussed at great length today at pick number four. Options we've kind of just written off. Maybe we shouldn't be so quick to write off guys that could really help this roster over the long haul. So we're going to get into that today. But first, Justin, the Titans are back on the practice field. Here is a video that the Titans released on their social media yesterday. Cam Ward throwing the ball to Wandale Robinson. Now, one thing that confuses me about this is that they are not allowed to do any like on-field football activities yet. So I don't know where this is coming from. I also saw a clip from the Dolphins of Malik Willis throwing to Malik Washington down there in Miami. My guess is the players went out to the field themselves and said, let's do some stuff, because they're not allowed to be coached and run any kind of drills or team football activities yet. They're only doing strength conditioning work right now. But still, we get some nice clips on the timeline. Cam Ward to Wandale Robinson. Hope we see a lot of that this season.
You know you can't keep Cam Ward from getting the guys together and throwing the football. Throw the rule book in the garbage. Glad to see he was on the field getting work in with his new $70 million wide receiver in Wendell Robinson. So important that those two have chemistry. Glad that they're trying to build it here in early April.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But enough of that, because there's really nothing else to talk about from those workouts quite yet. Can't wait to dive into all that stuff after the draft. But for now, we're talking about the draft. Before we get to the options that are crazy, first, a quick announcement. We hear you on the feedback on the show, and we're going to call a moratorium on Jeremiah Love talk. So we won't mention him today, won't bring him up today, won't poke holes in his game today either. I think some people wish I would be a little more critical of Jeremiah Love. We're not going to do that either. We're just not going to talk about him. And by telling you that we're not talking about him, I am talking about him. But we're not going to talk about him after this. Justin, I apologize to you and to our audience for my infatuation with the Notre Dame running back. Instead, we're going to talk about what Daniel Jeremiah had to say a few days ago about who the Titans may or may not be actually interested in at pick number four.
Yeah, the other thing is, I know people are listening or watching and go, well, what about Reuben Bain? There's another pass rusher there. The stuff that I've got out of Tennessee is I don't think they're a huge Bain team. Now, look, we'll see how accurate that ends up being. But I was told that was not their guy. So we'll see.
Reuben Bain, not their guy. Now, look, we touched on this briefly yesterday when we talked about how much of a prototypical wide nine end David Bailey is for Robert Saleh's defense. And we said Reuben Bain's not that. Reuben Bain, I saw a report today, a lot of teams have Bain as like a three-tech pass rusher on third downs who can bump outside on early downs, almost more in the mold of a John Franklin Myers than like a David Bailey type of player. The Titans obviously have no need for that with Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers already on the roster. What do you make of this Daniel Jeremiah report? Because you and I have sort of sat here and said multiple times, like, we feel like it's either Love or Bain, because we don't think Bailey makes it to pick four. And if it's not Love, it's probably Bain. But it doesn't sound like it's Bain. I don't know. It's interesting.
It seems like all the smoke right now, and again, like 2 weeks out, sometimes it's smoke screen season. Some of the stuff coming out is true. Some of it is not. You know, I can't wait to kind of, you know, filter through what was accurate and what wasn't. But
yeah,
it does feel like all the smoke right now indicates that he's not going to be a top five pick. It feels like those teams picking at 8, 9, 10, like the New Orleans Saints, who haven't re-signed Cameron Jordan, by the way. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs were not very good rushing the passer a year ago. And then, of course, the Cincinnati Bengals, who are an abomination on defense. It feels like those three teams are probably circling the Reuben Bain wagon right now, and they maybe expect him to fall to that range. I said this an hour ago, or not less, on Ramon and Will. I don't think he's going to be the Titans pick either. Like, I'm trying to separate my personal evaluation from what I think is going to happen. I haven't changed my tune on Reuben Bain the whole time. I really like him as a prospect. I hate betting on outliers because the word outlier exists for a reason. You lose most of the time when you bet on outliers, right? That's the literal definition of the word. I'm willing to put that aside personally and gamble on Reuben Bain being a really good football player, despite a lot of the historical data saying and suggesting that he might not be, right? Like, that's what it says. You look at historical outliers throughout the history of the NFL, you find your Aaron Donald. No two situations are the same, and no one's the same as Reuben Bain. But you find your Aaron Donalds, I don't know, your Julian Edelmans, like these guys, Tom Brady obviously getting drafted where he did makes him an outlier. You find these outliers, and they, again, that word exists for a reason. I love Reuben Bain. I think he should be in play for the Titans at number four, but I also understand why he might not be. I'm not going to sit here and let my personal opinion cloud, you know, the what their evaluation may be. I get it. He does have, like, the shortest arms you've almost ever seen out of an edge rusher, right? Like, that's it. We know Robert Saleh. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, again, with the David Bailey wide nine stuff. We know he really values length and size and speed and explosion and straight line athleticism. Reuben Bain's not really that guy. Like, I think he's athletic enough, but he also didn't test at the combine, suggesting maybe he was trying to hide what might have been poor testing numbers. When I watch him on tape, it's not the first thing I say where I go, this is a really athletic, you know, bend the corner freak, straight line. I know he can, we saw the, you know, clips of him bending, but I don't, that's not the first thing I see on tape. I don't think this is your prototypical, he's going to win by bending the corner every single rep, or you can't match his get off or straight line explosion speed. I think he generates a lot of explosion through his power and things of that nature, but he's certainly a different type of rusher. It hasn't really aligned with the type of rushers Robert Saleh has preferred in the past. And then once you get into the length, you know, historically being deficient, I get why he might not be an option for them at number four. I'm at the point where I'm actually buying into that. I'm buying into the fact that I don't think he's going to be an option for them at four. I like him a lot, so I hope he still is an option. But if I had to guess, I don't think he's the pick at number four.
I mean, we don't know what Daniel Jeremiah is hearing. We don't know who's getting him that information and if it's real or not real.
He's
because
well connected. It doesn't mean someone's not lying to him, you know, to put right. A smoke screen out there. But obviously, he's incredibly well connected.
And I like when he says, like, obviously, we'll see how true that is. Like, he caveats it himself. He knows that not all the information this time of year is believable. Worth noting, by the way, via recently from Matt Miller and Jordan Reed, that two players were mentioned as possible targets that the Cowboys might be looking to move up the board for: safety Caleb Downs and edge Reuben Bain. So if the Titans did find themselves in a position where the top of the board goes Mendoza and the next two picks in any order are Bailey and Reese, and it's sitting there and it is really Reuben Bain or Jeremiah Love or one of the other Ohio State players, somebody else that we may be about to talk about, if those are your options and the Cowboys call and say, hey, we want Reuben Bain, can we come up? We'll give you 12 and 20. Then you really might have to start entertaining that idea of trading down to 12.
I don't know that I would just entertain it. I think I would do it, right? Like, if you're going to 12, you're also getting 20 from the Cowboys as well. So you can still get maybe you might get a Carnell Tate there, or maybe you love Mekhi Lemon. You might get one of the, I don't think you'll get one of the premier edge rushers, but like there's just so many, you're going to have a lot of options. You can go one of the premier corners. You can get Omar Cooper Jr. at 20 if you get a corner or edge at 12. Like, or an old lineman. I think it's, I don't think they're going to take a lineman in the first, but the conversation changes if you've moved back to 12 and 20, right? So, but in this draft, like, I think let's keep the principal baseline rules what they should be. We know this is a draft that lacks high-end blue chip talent, right? Furthermore, we know this is a draft that lacks blue chip talent at premium positions. It's not an edge rushers, offensive lineman type of class, right? And at least not at the top it is. So if you can move back and stack multiple picks in the top 20, I think it's probably a no-brainer. Like, I think Jordan Schultz reported yesterday, and no offense to him, that I think someone fed him pure smokescreen info. We're going to see a historic amount of drafts in this trade. A historic amount of trades in this draft, first round of this draft. That would shock me. In this draft that we all say lacks blue chip talent and high-end premium position talent, and teams are going to part with 2027 draft capital when we're supposed to get Jeremiah Smith and all these quarterbacks. Like, I don't, and the rusher from Texas, I do not think we are going to see a super active first round with trades. That would shock me. I think someone fed one of the most popular, one of the biggest following analysts, you know, one of the biggest he has one of the biggest followings on Twitter. I think someone fed him pure smokescreen BS. I'll be shocked if we see a ton of trades. I wouldn't understand it.
Honestly, I kind of feel the opposite. I will take the opposite stance here because I think we could see a ton of trades in the first round because of the lack of talent in the class, where some teams, like, everybody's going to have this board graded differently. And just because you're maneuvering in the first round doesn't mean you're giving up 2027 picks. I totally agree with you that. I don't think we're going to see any 2027 picks moved in this draft because nobody wants to sacrifice their chance at next year's class, where you could get, you know, the 15th player drafted in next year's class could be like the third pick in this year's class. That's the difference in talent level.
It's normally what it takes, though. Like, you normally got to part with something in a future draft.
Not necessarily. I mean, it depends on how far you're moving. But I could definitely see a world where a lot of teams only have like 8 first round grades in this class. Sure. And they get to the point where they're like, all our guys are gone, we'll move back, we don't care. Whereas other teams have like 13 or 14 first round grades, and they're not all the same 13 or 14 players. So there's like one or two guys left that the team picking at 20, maybe not 20 because that's the Cowboys, but whatever, picking in the 20s, it's like there's only one or two guys left. The team picking in the teens is like, none of our guys are left. Yeah, we'll move back 6 spots for a day 2 pick in this draft. I could see a scenario like that happening because of just the disparity in talent and how these different teams could grade these players. It also wouldn't shock me to see a historically low number of first-round trades because of exactly what you're seeing, but I also wouldn't write that off as pure smokescreen. Another report that's interesting and tangential to this that we should at least hit quickly is that there is a lot of smoke building, and we've referenced this without citing it, but there's a lot of smoke building for David Bailey going number 2 to the Jets, and that comes from Albert Breer mentioned it, Daniel Jeremiah mentioned it. One other person mentioned it.
Todd McShay, maybe?
Todd McShay might have mentioned it. I texted you somebody else who mentioned it, and now I can't remember who it is, but I'm going to get into it. Oh, Peter Schrager mocked David Bailey to the Jets at number 2 in his mock. I saw some speculation that sometimes in Schrager's first mock, because he always does 2, right? In his first mock, he plants seeds hoping to hear from personnel men around the league about, oh, you think this guy's going there? Oh, you think this guy's falling this far? Oh, would this team actually do this to try to like get more intel? But him putting David Bailey number 2 to the Jets, Jeremiah mentioning that he's heard some smoke there, and then Albert Breer yesterday going even more definitively saying he really thinks that's going to happen. That is an interesting shift because this, you know, for months we've been talking that Arvell Reese is a lock at 2. It almost opens the possibility that Arvell Reese makes it to 4. I do think if the Cardinals had a chance to draft him, they would draft him. But maybe, I don't know, maybe the organization is scarred by Isaiah Simmons or something. Not that they're the same player, but the same kind of hybrid-y thing. I think it's we should talk about what happens if Arvell Reese is on the board at 4 and what the other craziest things the Titans could do with that 4th pick right after this break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, But asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. All right, welcome back. So, Justin, if Arvel Reese makes it to four, I have a hard time seeing how the Titans don't draft him. Like, you might get a trade offer in that spot if he's the guy who makes it, which could make it more enticing not to draft him. But I feel like, I mean, Dane Brugler has him as the number one overall player in the draft in the Beast. I know you are high on Arvel Reese. Like, I've gone back and forth on being, like, I don't know, intrigued by his upside and scared of the tweener status, like, position projection you're making as a full-time edge player. But I don't know. I do think at the end of the day, if Arvel Reese is on the board at four, you have to draft him. You almost just have to draft him. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right, and I think the Tennessee Titans would. I don't think they would even think twice about that, and that includes your Notre Dame running back being on the board. I think they would take Arvel Reese. I just, he's been Brugler's number one player like the whole way from like October onward. He's never switched out of that. I told you that when I watch the tape on him, I get a special feeling that I don't really get a lot when I watch prospects because I watch so many of them. I do feel that he's different. I feel he's in another tier in terms of like strength and athleticism and knockback power at his size. I think he's a really, really good prospect. And if he's like, I could see the Jets going with Bailey at two. I get it. It's an easier, safer projection. He had 14.5 sacks this past year, true pass rush win rate, like prototypical size at edge. Like, totally get why the Jets might go David Bailey at two. I think the Cardinals would probably take Reese at three. I have heard coming out of Arizona that they really like Sonny Styles. So I do wonder if David Bailey's not there. And we've heard some smoke, by the way, from some of the main draft analysts or the mainstream ones of Styles going in the top five. Like, that's been out there as well. I do think there's a world out there where if the Cardinals are choosing between Styles and Reese, that they could pull the first mini draft surprise on that Thursday and take Sonny Styles. And leave the Titans Arvel Reese. I think the Titans would take Reese in that scenario. I might even mock it in my final mock draft. I've kind of been going back and forth with those two scenarios, to be honest with you, with what the Cardinals do at three. And if so, I think there's a great chance that if they take Sonny Styles, I think the Titans would take Arvel Reese at number four, and I would totally be in favor of the pick.
Yeah, I mean, I would be in favor of the pick too. And like all of my bias towards a certain player that we're having a moratorium on mentioning is based on the fact that Reese would have been gone, that it's been a foregone conclusion that Reese would be gone. So if Reese is there, I do feel like you have to take him. And that would be crazy from the sense that, you know, a week ago, nobody would have expected that Reese could even possibly fall to the fourth pick. So that falls under the parameters of this episode's title as a crazy thing Mike Borgonzi could do. The absolute craziest thing that I sort of want to write off before we really dive into this subject is trading up from the fourth pick. We've seen mocks of it happening. We've seen PFF do this. Other places have done this as well, where they have the Titans trading up to three to secure Jeremiah Love or somebody else, David Bailey, whatever, so that nobody else can jump them. I think that would be absolutely insane. I think there is a 0.0 or less percent chance that Mike Borgonzi gives up extra assets to move up one or two spots in this draft class. I think it's totally crazy. I think it is 1 million times more likely that they trade back than them that then they trade up. So that's the craziest thing. I just wanted to throw it out there as like we're not ignoring the possibility, but to me it is an impossibility. It's impossible for me to fathom the Titans moving up in this draft.
It's impossible. No, impossible. I mean, they've talked about all the top 100 picks they want over these next couple of years. They want more picks. They want more picks, not less. It makes absolutely no sense. I would be stunned if they're at number four. I'd be stunned if they moved up to two or three. They're either picking at four or they're trading down from there. They're not moving up to two or three.
Yeah. So the next craziest thing I think they could do. Now, this is something I've heard. I've seen this in, we saw this in mocks a while ago. We sort of said, you guys are dumb. This is not happening. It hasn't been talked about much lately. I was talking yesterday, Justin, with Dave Hellman of the Athletic Football Show. We had him on Heed the Call. He was the host of the Fox Sports podcast that I produced when I was at Fox Sports. So me and Dave have a great relationship. We were just talking and he said to me that he thinks the Titans would be well served by simply drafting what he calls a really good football player, a versatile football player, somebody that would have, I think, most Titans fans in a panicked, like, days of crazy, like, why would we make this selection? But I do think there's an argument to be made for Miami offensive tackle Francis Maungnoa, who isn't the best tackle prospect we've seen enter the draft in the last decade or whatever. He's not like a lock to go top three. There is a lot of mock drafters pairing him with the Cardinals at three. But then if you pay close attention to the Cardinals beat, their team reporters are saying things like the Cardinals seem to be meeting with a lot of day two tackle prospects. They haven't met with either of the top two tackle prospects that we know of. It seems like the Cardinals are not looking at tackle at three as much as some pundits want to make that selection for them, which leads me to believe he could be on the board at four. He likely will be on the board at four. If the Titans really want to, you know, stick to positional value and not take a chance on one of these edge rushers with question marks, is there a world where they select Francis Maungnoa at the fourth pick, throw him at right guard, where some analysts say this is a tackle prospect who might end up having to play guard because he doesn't necessarily have the length and foot quickness to be a premier tackle, but maybe he could develop into one. Do you throw him at right guard for his rookie year and then see if he can make that jump to left tackle, cut Dan Moore heading into 2027, grab your left tackle of the future, at a what would be, you know, a discount according to the going rate for a starting left tackle by drafting him with that fourth pick? Pay attention to positional value, care about it a little bit with this pick, make a pick that most Titans fans would be like, what are we doing? How much high draft capital can we invest in an offensive line and not see like real results? Like, why don't the Titans have one of the best lines in the NFL with all the investment they've made there? To me, it is the craziest thing Mike Borgonzi could do, short of trading up, is to draft an offensive lineman here. But nobody ever went wrong building their team through the trenches. Like, it would take me half a second to get over my, you know, disappointment. But I do think, like, ultimately, I could see the vision for this from a team-building perspective. It's not about 2026 necessarily, but you can get use out of him in 2026 if you play him as your right guard this year. I don't know, Justin. Am I off my rocker here?
Yeah, I hate everything you said. I'm just going to be brutally honest. I hate everything. It took all my might not to scream and interrupt you. No, I'm kidding. But, well, I do hate it, though, because number one, I think he might be a guard. I think there's a good chance he's a guard. And I don't think you take a guard at number four. I mean, that would be crazy to take a guard that high.
Quentin Nelson went, what, fifth overall?
Six, I think, and he was called like a Hall of Fame guard before the draft. No one is calling Francis Maungnoa a Hall of Fame guard, right? Like, totally different between Quentin Nelson. And that was two picks later, I think. I think Nelson went sixth, if I'm remembering correctly. But anyway, go ahead.
He was also a guard prospect. Like, Maungnoa is a tackle prospect who might play guard. So that maybe that's why he's not being billed as a future Hall of Fame guard. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm not
future Hall of Fame anything, I don't think, number one.
And fair. Secondly, I'm not going to sit here and say that I want the Titans to do this. But if they did it,
I'm just telling you why I hate what you said. I'm being honest. Can I have an honest moment on this pod? Number one, if he's a guard, you don't take him at number four. Number two, it's really hard to play offensive line in this league. I hate the idea of starting him out at guard and then kicking him out to left tackle, like as a sophomore. I think you just get your feet wet in year one at a new position, by the way, because he is a tackle. And then you're asking him to kick out to left tackle as a sophomore. I think it's a terrible developmental plan that would backfire. And number three, I don't think he's a left tackle. I mean, I know, you know, left and right, maybe we're splitting hairs there, but I think he's a right tackle. You know, that's what he played in college. And I think his pro, if he's going to play tackle at all, I think his profile is much better suited to where he actually has experience, right tackle than left tackle. So I don't think he should be an option for the Titans at number four. You trade down to 12, you pick up a bunch of picks and he's there. I get why he might become one of the options, because he might be the best player on the board at 12 and he'd potentially fill an immediate need right at right guard. But for me at four, there's no way I'd even consider it.
Fair enough, Justin. Do you have something that you would consider the craziest thing Mike Borgonzi could do at pick four that we haven't talked about already?
Well, we've talked about it in the past, but we haven't talked about it today. So I think we give it a couple of minutes at the end here. Sonny Styles. You know, we just spent a lot of time talking about, well, what if the Cardinals take Sonny Styles and leave the Titans Arvell Reese? Well, Sonny Styles is in that caliber of prospect, right? Like, he was one of the best players in this draft. I mean, the combine solidified that, established himself as probably the freakiest athlete in this entire NFL draft. His tape is outstanding. His tape is just as good as any player in this draft. So when we talk about Arvell Reese at four, I get there's, you know, the pass rushing upside there. But when we talk about your Notre Dame running back, who we're not talking about today, I don't get why Sonny Styles isn't an option. Yes, just like Love, he plays a devalued position. But just like Love, he's one of the best prospects in the draft. So I think it's very well within reason to think the Titans could be really high on Sonny Styles. And if Bailey and Reese are not there, then you can talk me into them thinking he's the best option on the board. I mean, again, they might value linebacker over running back. And I think the prospect is essentially on par with Love. By that, I mean, he's one of the best prospects in this draft, hands down. So I still think they would love to see Reese or Bailey there on the board. But if those two guys are not there and they can't trade down, then I would wager, I know you might not agree and it's fine, I might wager that Styles is just as likely as Love is. I see them on equal footing. They're both really good prospects at devalued positions, right? So they might think linebacker is less devalued than running back. They might like him better. Or the defensive-minded head coach might say, if we're choosing between these two guys, I've got a really good fit in my defense for this linebacker. I know exactly how he's going to help us. He's going to totally transform this defense. It is the craziest, borderline, very realistic thing they could do at number four.
Yeah, I do like that caveat. We are keeping these two realistic in the sense that, again, they're not going to take a kicker here. That would be the craziest thing Mike Borgonzi could do, is take a kicker at number four overall. We're like, craziest realistic thing. Let me tell you why I hate your pitch, Justin, since you did it to me. I'm going to do it right back to you. Now, I don't hate Sonny Styles. I think Sonny Styles is going to be a fantastic NFL defensive player. I think he would be my pick right now before knowing what teams everybody goes to for defensive rookie of the year. I think that he has like the best chance to make an instant impact as a starter on a defense, like more than the defensive ends who, again, have question marks. And maybe, play well as rookies, but if they're not piling up double-digit sacks as rookies, they're probably not winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. Meanwhile, Styles could have 150 tackles and, like, you know, two forced fumbles, an interception, something like six sacks, and be easily Defensive Rookie of the Year. The reason that I don't like that direction if they went that way is that I feel like there are so many promising, we'll call them promising because you never know how anyone's going to pan out, but so many promising linebacker prospects that could be available anywhere from rounds 2 through 5. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I have a little bit of a liking for. Not going to say they're definitely well-rounded, complete players. They're not the athletic freaks that Sonny Styles is, who can also, by the way, Styles has been reported by everyone close to Ohio State as an awesome locker room guy, a real team leader guy, a real culture leader guy. And those are the reasons I could see them making this kind of a pick, especially when you consider Robert Saleh's history with linebackers. I've seen analysts say, like, does Robert Saleh see Sonny Styles as his Fred Warner? If so, I could see this being the pick. I think it's what's so crazy about this draft, Justin. It's pretty rare that your team picks this high and you have literally no idea what they're going to do, which direction they're leaning. We have no reports really about who they like. We have one sort of half report about who they might not like being Reuben Bain, which is antithetical to like everything we've been talking about for the last 3 months. So it's a really, really, it's going to be a really crazy fun draft 2 weeks from tonight, Justin, to find out what the Titans do, because I could see them, obviously, I could see them doing what's written over my shoulder, which I'm not mentioning on this episode. Obviously, we could see them taking one of the edge rushers, whoever falls, however many fall. But having seeing them take Sonny Styles, seeing them take Francis Malinoa, like, yeah, those would be crazy moves, but they wouldn't be completely off the wall shocking to where we'd be like, what? I never saw that coming. Like, everything's on the table, which I think makes this draft more interesting than most. But also a little more frustrating because, like, we are still locked on this pick. We're still talking about this pick. I feel like in most years by now, we're doing, like, deep day three sleepers the Titans could pick because we, like, last year, this time, we knew Cam Ward was the pick. So we were ready to move on and talk about what are they going to do in the second round. And we've hit some of the day two stuff. But, like, I feel like we have to keep coming back to this topic because there's so many options to cover. There's so many directions it can go. Like, I just don't know. It's crazy.
Well, it's an extremely unique NFL draft, and that's what makes it so unpredictable, especially if Titans were picking at 2 or 3, I think we'd be a lot easier, to be honest with you. But at 4, yeah, there's that caveat that Bailey and Reese will be gone. I'll end today's episode by saying this. If one of those rushers is on the board, David Bailey or Arvell Reese, I still expect them to be the pick. That's how I'm feeling, but there's a great chance they go 2-3 overall, right? So we'll see. We'll be back tomorrow with a special live edition, the weekly Friday live stream of the Music City Audible, same time every Friday, 10:30 a.m. Central. Make sure you're tuned in. You guys loved last week's episode, the NFL Draft Mailbag. We might make it something similar. We're still figuring that out, but you guys loved getting in those questions, and perhaps we'll put out a tweet later today that asks you to submit questions that we'll answer again. We'll figure it out, but I thought last week's show went great, so I wouldn't mind doing something similar.
I agree. What if we did a mock draft, live mock draft with trades? We just go nuts with trades. And then it's like, it's almost not even about what the final mock draft looks like. It's more just about, like, if we end up with like 15 picks, it is what it is. But it's more like about, like, in each round, if we're picking here, what are the trade options? And just like get a better idea of who's available where. Because most Titans fans, I'm assuming, who have done a lot of mock drafts like me, haven't been making a lot of trades midway through the draft. Be interesting to see, like, oh, we're picking at a different spot in the second round or the third round or the fourth round. What names are there?
I'm a big fan of being realistic, so I don't want to trade in every round, but it would be fun to do a mock draft where we trade down in the first, trade down in the second, and make all the picks, because we didn't do that last time.
Right.
We only played out the first round. Make all the picks, show what a class would look like. We'll be talking NFL draft tomorrow, folks. We might be doing live mock drafts on the stream. Join us 10:30 a.m. Central. This has been a fun episode of the Music City Audible. Until you take off work tomorrow to join the live stream, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.